Welcome to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM on your dial. Next up, Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. Hold on tight. And thank you so much for joining us tonight. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM on your dial, streaming at WRFG.org around the globe. Welcome to Atlanta's Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I, once again, am your host, Greg S. Bossen. And thank you so much for listening. The opinions expressed here are, of course, those of myself and my guest, and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, volunteers, funders, or listeners. How is everybody doing? I want to start by saying I hope you had a wonderful Pride weekend that was canceled, but yet people were still out and proud. The bars still had parties. There were tons of them. The Georgia Aquarium Friday night party still happened with over 1,000 partygoers. I consider that to be one of the cooler events of Pride. And hundreds of people were out in the park with their shirts off and flags ablaze and all of the goings on, and I was not there. The weather was beautiful, though, but I was not there. But I understand that the people that were there had a blast, even though there were no funnel cakes to purchase. You had to bring your own food, but whatever. People still had a wonderful time, so I think that's really cool, actually, that, you know, and I mean, we all are going to be very excited when the parade comes back and the festival comes back. It was canceled because of COVID this year, just like last year. But I'm glad to see that people were still out and proud. And, you know, we don't necessarily need all of the trappings of a festival in order to be proud, do we? So anyway, I think that's really cool. So tonight on the show, we are going to have Jeff Graham, who is the executive director of Georgia Equality. He's been so for a number of years. He's been on the show before, and he knows about all things political, particularly related to LGBTQ issues, which Georgia Equality fights on behalf of the LGBTQ citizens to make sure that we have legislation that is helpful to us and not hurtful to us. And we have elections coming up, folks. As a matter of fact, early voting for elections that the election day is in November, of course, but early voting is beginning, and you can actually vote this Saturday, by the way. So we're going to talk to Mr. Graham about all things political. So before we do that, by the way, one of those races is the mayoral race, so pay attention, folks. But before we do that,
news of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh, no, she didn't say what.
So as usual, I'm going to start with COVID and to let you know that, as you probably already know, the numbers are coming down. And as of, let's see, October the 10th, which was 2 days ago, the 7-day average of cases was 2,849. So we're averaging a little less than 3,000 cases a day, which is in the state of Georgia, which is good when you consider that back in September, in early September, we were averaging almost 8,000 cases a day. So deaths are down as well. So we're doing well, and I assume as long as there's not another variant that comes around, and as long as people don't get stupid, hopefully we won't see another big influx of COVID cases later this year. We've got to get those people at the hospitals a break. Anyway, all right, enough of that, correct? I think so. All right. So yesterday was coming out day, which is, and I, you know, I think I'm going to let everybody know, if you didn't already know, I am gay. Gay. I've always been gay. Always will be gay. I thought it was going to be a little blip when I first started being attracted to boys when I was, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old. But no, that was not to be. And alas, I am still gay. So anyway, and happy to be so. All right. So, and yesterday, our illustrious President Biden came out with a statement to mark National Coming Out Day. And I will read you this statement. My administration is committed to ensuring that LGBTQ plus people can live openly, proudly, and freely in every corner of our nation. Despite the extraordinary progress our nation has made, our work to ensure the full promise of equality is not yet done. Boy, ain't that the truth. Anti-LGBTQ plus bills still proliferate in state legislatures, including Georgia. Bullying and harassment, particularly of young transgender Americans and LGBTQ plus people of color, still abounds, diminishing our national character. From acting on day one to prevent and combat discrimination to enabling all qualified Americans, including transgender Americans, to serve their country in uniform. That's something that Biden overturned after Trump denied trans people the ability to serve, which is ridiculous. Now that's been reinstituted. To defending human rights of LGBTQ plus people around the globe, my administration has been clear that we will continue to champion the dignity, equality, and well-being of LGBTQ plus individuals. So, and it goes on a little bit more, but I'm not going to worry about the rest of it. I think that's awesome. So anyway, thank you, President Biden. Now on the other end of the spectrum, we have Tulsi Gabbard, Miss Crazy. Who went on an insane 4 a.m. Twitter rant, freaking out over non-binary people. Tulsi Gabbard is the presidential candidate who had failed. I think she was from Hawaii, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it was California. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. Anyway, she must have been really bored because and this was early in the morning on Sunday, she took to Twitter to rage tweet about COVID cases among pregnant non-binary people. So in the wee hours of the morning, Tulsi Gabbard shared an article about how pregnant individuals infected with the Delta variant of the coronavirus are more likely to have severe cases of COVID-19. So because the article called them pregnant people instead of pregnant women, Gabbard freaked out. So she went on a Twitter rant. Pregnant people, read the headline again. Some people hate women so much that they literally want to erase even the word woman from our vocabulary. Yeah, that's not the point. Forget the pandemic. Forget your sick parents. Forget your children. Forget the hospital workers. Gabbard is most upset about the gender inclusive language being used to talk about the issue. What an idiot. Anyway. Again, my own personal opinion. All right. What else do we have here? Here's another idiot. So this is a gay Trump insurrectionist complaining that he can't get a date. Brandon Straka, a 44-year-old New York-based hairstylist and Trump lover, has just pled guilty to a misdemeanor disorderly conduct charge for his role in the January 6th Capitol insurrection. In addition to begging his followers for money, Straka is now complaining that he can't get a date. So sorry about that, Mr. Straka. He's mildly attractive, at least physically. But anyway, lastly, this is kind of cool. for those of you that like comics, it's official. Superman is queer. DC Comics has celebrated National Coming Out Day by confirming a long-rumored development. Superman has officially come out as bisexual. To be clear, this is not the well-known Clark Kent Superman, but rather his son, John Kent. Gay Times reports that DC has confirmed the character will officially come out in the pages of Superman, Son of Kal-El, on, well, October 9th, it says, which has already happened. So anyway, I've always said everyone needs heroes and everyone deserves to see themselves in their heroes. And I'm very grateful for DC and Warner Brothers. This is Tom Taylor, the writer of the book, said in a statement, Superman's symbol has always stood for hope, truth, and justice. Today, that symbol represents something more. Today, more people can see themselves in the most powerful superhero in comics. So let's hear it for Gay Superman, the Son. And we will be right back.
The message is perfectly simple. The meaning is clear. Don't ever stray too far. And don't disappear. No, don't disappear. Ever had the feeling? Almost broken too.
All right. Thank you for joining us again at WRFG. Atlanta, 89.3 FM on your dial, streaming at WRFG.org. I hope you are doing well. It's post-Pride of sorts, right? We were supposed to have Pride, but it was canceled, but we were proud anyway. The park was full of people, and so were the bars. Not surprising at all. But you were listening to Alternative Perspectives. This is Tuesday, in case you don't know, and I'm Greg Bossen. I am your host, and on this is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting the queer community, if you were not aware. And tonight, we are going to get political. We have elections coming up. And so with us on the show tonight, we have the director of Georgia Equality, Jeff Graham, with us, who I happen to love. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing? And thank you for coming on the show.
I'm doing well, Greg, especially with that introduction. Thank you.
What did you do this weekend, by the way? Did you do anything pridey?
I wore my rainbow Chuck Taylor high tops. That was about the only pridey thing I really did. this weekend, certainly on Monday, I commemorated National Coming Out Day.
Yes, that was yesterday.
Which I think is important as well. That was yesterday.
Did you come out? Did you come out?
I came out. Yeah.
Me too.
Actually, we Georgia Equality. We kicked off a week of asking people to share some of their coming out stories with our members of Congress, as we're anticipating and hoping that there will be a vote on the Federal Equality Act sometime before the end of the year. And so we are asking people to share their coming out stories with members of Congress this week to commemorate National Coming Out Day.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, if we have time, I may ask you to share your coming out
story
before we get to
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be great. I went back in and then came right back out. So I was in the closet for about 45 minutes in the morning, and then I came back out again. But anyway, all right. So obviously we are less than 2 months away. I mean, it's obvious to you. It may not be obvious to everybody, but we are less than 2 months away from elections here in Atlanta and across the state of Georgia. And in the wake of Trump's loss last year, both nationally and here in Georgia, the Republican-led state legislature here has passed legislation restricting access to voting under the guise of preventing voter fraud. This happened a few months ago, but can you remind our listeners of the specifics of what the legislation did? And I really want to kind of get it. You know, people tend to speak in broad strokes. Really want to understand the specifics of the legislation.
Yeah, happy to do that. The one thing I want to correct a little bit, the municipal election, actually, early voting starts today. So that's going to be important to know. And that actually is one of the changes in the law that I would say is a good thing. I'll start with probably the only nice thing about the law, and that is that all municipalities, all jurisdictions around the state have to do 3 weeks of early voting. There had been some back and forth. It also got codified into law around the 3 weeks of early voting. So here in the city of Atlanta and throughout the metropolitan Atlanta area, where there are probably close to two dozen municipalities, depending upon where listeners may be, that are having elections for their local elected officials, city councils, and school boards this year. And that voting starts today, October 12th, and will go through to November 2nd. We anticipate that in a number of these municipalities, and very specifically here within the city of Atlanta, there will be a number of runoffs, and those runoff elections will be decided let me make sure I get the proper date on that. Those will be on Tuesday, November 30th is when the runoff election will be. So I just wanted to say that out there so that the folks know, because unfortunately, turnout in municipal elections are some of the lowest turnout rates that we have. And then especially for runoffs, oftentimes it's only 10 or 15% of a mm-hmm. population that ends up deciding an important thing like who's going to be the mayor of Atlanta, or who's going to be the city council president, or who are going to be the city council members that represent the at-large districts 1 and 3, which represent the entire city. So I'm hoping everybody will pay attention and will participate both in the general election as well as the runoff. But that doesn't really answer your question. To get to your question, there's a number of provisions that the bill addresses, and I'm not going to be able to get into all of them. And some of them that folks have talked about, such as limiting the ability of outside groups to hand out water or snacks if there's long lines. Those things have been talked a lot about, but those aren't really the real serious issues that concern me. And people will begin to experience this as they begin to vote right now. So the first thing that I think
stop you just 1 second. So I know that absentee voting begins today. But yeah. If you've not asked for a ballot, you're unable to do that, correct?
You still have time to ask for a ballot. You have to submit your application at least 11 days before the general election. So, that is something that again was a change in the law. It used to be that you could submit your application right up to just a few days before the election. This is 11 days. I would say that this is, there's some good and some bad parts to that.
But I think that you have to mail. Yesterday was the last day that they would mail an absentee ballot to you, is what my understanding was. You'll have to go get it if you want an absentee ballot now. Is that wrong?
That was not my understanding. I could be wrong on that. There's so many changes that went into effect.
Yeah.
I believe you could apply for up to 11 days before the election. So they would send those out.
Okay. All right.
So they are sending them out. I think that folks are starting to receive their ballots right now. The one thing about absentee ballots that is a pretty substantial change for folks who are disabled or folks who are over 65. The law in Georgia used to be that you could apply to be a permanent absentee voter. So if it was going to be an ongoing hardship for you to make it to the polls, again, if you were disabled, if you were over the age of 65, you could check a box on your absentee ballot and you would then always receive an absentee ballot in the mail. That has been changed now. you must reapply at the beginning of every election cycle. And you have to check the box if you want to receive absentee ballots throughout the election cycle. So for instance, if you are 65 or older and you had previously received your ballot, my mother is in senior housing, and she told me last week that everybody is asking why haven't they received their ballots, because they usually have received their ballots by now. And this is the reason why, is they're not automatically being sent out. Everyone in her senior living complex is going to have to download the application. You have to print it out. You can no longer do this online, and you have to mail it in. So this is how voter suppression amongst the bill works, or amongst the new law works. That we now have, you know, tens of thousands of older voters or disabled voters, maybe hundreds of thousands of voters that are probably going to be sitting around waiting for their ballot to show up, and it's never going to show up. And it'll probably be too late for them to vote by absentee. Then those folks have to have access to a computer and access to a printer to be able to print out the application. The application itself is a government form that has gotten even longer. You have to state the reason why you are applying for an absentee ballot. Georgia is still a state that anyone can apply for an absentee ballot, but you have to list the reason there, whereas before you didn't necessarily have to do that. And then if you want to have the ballot sent to you for the runoff, you have to check a box. So there are three or four major steps in this, and you have to have an ID. A driver's license is the preferable form of ID. You have to list your driver's license number on there so that they can verify you through your ID. So there's a lot of steps. One person who this affected, and he reached out to me a couple of weeks ago to talk about this. He said it took him about 45 minutes to figure out the entire process and get it right. So I want to talk about that first and foremost, because that I know is affecting lots and lots of people. And a lot of people that just don't know, because Frank, to be honest with you, it was not one of the provisions I was even on my radar until this started happening to people. So I don't think it's been talked about enough. And so I do want to make sure that people realize
so if
that.
So if you are planning on absentee voting, you know, there's a bunch of hoops you're going to have to jump through. And you may, you're not necessarily going to. Now let's say that you give up on that. So, so talk about, I guess you would have to have a ballot and do we have drop boxes now, or?
We do still have drop boxes, and there is still early voting. So you can still go in person to early voting locations.
There's not as many of them, though, I don't believe, and they're not open.
There are not as many drop boxes as there were, and the drop boxes are now all inside buildings, and the buildings you can only drop off your ballot during the regular business hours that those buildings will be open. So,
which would be weekdays during the day.
Which is mostly weekdays during the day. Now, here in Fulton County, so City of Atlanta, I believe every election that's taking place within Fulton County, and probably DeKalb as well, but I'm not 100% sure about DeKalb, there will be two Saturdays of Saturday voting. So you can go on a Saturday to one of these locations. Still, the easiest way to find this out is to go on the Secretary of State's website, the My Voter page, and look up, that's where you can double check your voter registration status. It's too late to register to vote. So if you are not registered, it's unfortunately you're just not going to be able to vote in this round of municipal elections. But in there, you can then drop down, to the county that you vote in. We'll give you a link to the county page where it will list all of your options for early voting. That's also where you can download that absentee vote by mail ballot. I would say anyone who wants to vote by mail, please do that before Friday of this week. Download your application just, you know, now. Just as soon as you get done with the radio program, listen to the entire radio program, but then go to your computer and download that ballot and send it off tomorrow morning, because time is really running out to be able to vote by mail. To be able to vote early in person, you'll still have up until the Friday before the general election, and so that is going to be October 29th, that you'll still be able to vote early in person. There are still a number of locations that will be available throughout whatever jurisdiction you vote in, and there will be drop boxes. So if there's a line and you've applied for your absentee ballot, again, you would have to have a ballot mailed to you, but you can still drop that off if you want to do that instead of mailing it in. So you can just go. There's usually not a line, although we may see lines for drop boxes this year, because there are fewer of them, and the hours are going to be a bit more limited. It's not 24 hours anymore. But you can still vote early. You can still put it in a drop box. And I really encourage everybody to do that. Please don't wait until Tuesday, November 2nd to vote, because, you know, the weather could be bad. You could have a flat tire. Your pet might be sick. You may not be feeling well. There's lots of things that can happen at the last minute that could prohibit you from voting. So it's important that you do that. And it's important that you vote early, if at all possible. So really encourage people to do that. And I think that's the real big change that people haven't talked about. There's some other changes in how the state can take over boards of elections. You know, there's, of course, this voter ID to get an absentee ballot that you have to show a driver's license or a passport. There's other types of IDs that can be out there. Luckily, an analysis was done that showed that the overwhelming majority of voters do have a Georgia driver's license. So I think that's probably the easiest, most secure way to do that with your Georgia driver's license. But if you are one of those voters that does not have a valid Georgia driver's license, you are going to need a Georgia ID card, which you can get as well, or a passport. There's also a list of other documents that they'll accept. The handful of other documents you can find on the Secretary of State's website.
And I think I understand where I was coming up with this. It's not that you can't request an absentee ballot. It's that this is the first day, or actually yesterday, that they are going to begin mailing the absentee ballots out. And the two Saturdays, and this is important, the two mandatory Saturdays where you will be able to vote on a Saturday, the first one is this weekend, which is the 16th.
October 16th,
mm-hmm.
October 16th and October 23rd.
Which is
which is next weekend. I personally have voted in person on Saturdays as long as that's been an option. And frankly, in Fulton County, I have never had any sort of significant line that I've had to vote in. And I voted at a couple different community centers down at the main government complex. I voted in several locations, just as I've been out and about doing errands on a Saturday. So on my way to buy groceries or on my way out to the park. And it usually takes just, you know, maybe 15 minutes. A lot of these places will have free parking if it's a community center. So I really encourage people to take full advantage of that. You know, some of the other provisions of the law, again, I think it tends to be significant for those of us that care about voting rights. I don't know that most voters are really going to be affected by it, but last year there were a number of nonpartisan foundations and nonpartisan organizations that actually did mass emails of voter applications to folks. Provided funding to different boards of elections so that they could do these massive mailings of applications. No one actually received a ballot. that did not request it. I think that that's important because that's part of what the, if you will, the conspiracy theorists will put out there, that people were mailed ballots. That was not true. People had to still request a ballot, but that application was mailed to a lot of folks. That now can no longer happen. So you have to be proactive in getting that application yourself. Candidates can't do it. Organizations like Georgia Equality cannot do it. You're going to have to request that ballot by yourself.
And fair fight as well. And you couldn't, you can't knock on doors anymore to give applications out.
Right. Yeah. Voters have to do that. You can educate voters on this, but the voter has to request the ballot, him, her, or their self, completely.
That is unbelievable. I think that has long-term implications, especially since they're making it, you know, harder for you to vote absentee without having to be proactive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's well. All right. Well, we're gonna take a quick break here. We are speaking with Jeff Graham about the upcoming elections, and Jeff Graham is the director of Georgia Equality, and we will be right back.
You're listening to WRFG Atlanta. To become a WRFG supporter, please visit WRFG.org.
All right, and we are back. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM on your dial. I am Greg Bossen, and we are speaking with Jeff Graham about the upcoming elections. Jeff Graham is with Georgia Equality. And I want to get a little bit specific, Jeff, about what is going on with the law that we were just discussing. Like, is that still, is it being challenged? Apparently it's being used this cycle, correct?
Yes, it is being used this cycle. So those changes that we talked about, especially around early voting and absentee voting, that's what's going to affect most voters right now. Okay. And that is in effect with this. This is the first large election that we've seen these changes to. There were some special elections over the summer, but they were very limited, just a couple of very specific districts. This is the first widespread election, so we're really going to get a chance to see how this is going to affect voters.
Is it being challenged though, or I guess it's
yeah. There are a number of lawsuits. Fair Fight has lawsuits. ACLU of Georgia has lawsuits. I believe that there's a couple of other organizations that have filed lawsuits challenging the constitutionality of these changes. Unfortunately, even in a best case scenario, it can take sometimes years for challenges to make its way through the legal system, and primarily because of COVID. And the fact that so many of the courts have had significant delays in moving on cases. I don't know when any rulings on these challenges will be heard. Certainly not before. We're starting to vote. The early voting period starts today, Tuesday, October 12th. So it's going to affect everybody right now. And while I certainly hope that those legal challenges will be effective. What I think is critically important for everybody to understand, especially as progressive voters, we must be organized, and this is one of the things that we do, and we do extremely well. So we have to not be despondent. We have to have strong resolve that we will not let the law stand in our way of our right to vote, and we will not let that law stand in the way of our constituents, our communities, our neighbors, our friends, our family members from voting. So if you're hearing something on this program tonight that is new to you, please share that within your circles. Please go onto websites like Fair Fight. I mean, they're really taking the lead on so much of this. find the voting information there and share it in your networks. We've done this in the past. At the core, so many of us are community organizers. We have to lean into those skills now more than ever before to make sure that everybody has the right to vote and is able to vote in this municipal election, and even more so in the elections that will happen in 2022.
So just turning our attentions to this, you know, to the elections, one of the probably arguably the most important election is for the mayor. And Keisra Lance Bottoms has opted not to run, which is interesting. I've heard various opinions as to why that is. But anyway, there are 14 candidates, 5 front runners. And at this point, it feels like the two major front runners are Kasim Reed and Felicia Moore. Now, George Equality, you guys endorse candidates, but you've chosen, particularly in the mayoral race, not to endorse any particular candidate. Why is that?
Yeah, the mayor of Atlanta. There's some other mayors that are on the ballot that we made some endorsements in, but certainly for the city of Atlanta, and there's kind of two reasons for that. Just in general, when there are so many people running for an office, oftentimes it will go to a runoff. So we felt it was going to go for a runoff, and so we looked at those endorsements, the surveys that the candidates submitted to us very, very closely to see if anyone stood out. Frankly, if there had been one person that had really stood out above the rest, the board may have made the decision to endorse a specific candidate. Now, this is not to be that everybody was bad. In fact, increasingly here in the city of Atlanta, very specifically, almost everybody running for office is really good on LGBTQ issues. A lot of folks have a history of support of the LGBTQ community. It's very different than, you know, 25, 26, 27 years ago when Georgia Equality was first formed, and we needed to make sure that candidates did address issues of concern to the LGBT community. That really happens automatically these days. And so we made the decision earlier this year that we wanted to focus on other municipalities around the state to get them up where they need to be, that there is so much of a focus on Atlanta anyway. As a statewide organization, we really needed to be focused elsewhere in this election cycle. And so that's part of the reason. The other part of the reason then is very specific to the Housing Opportunities for People with AIDS program, or HOPWA. This is a program that in the past has received between $20 and $23 million a year from the federal government to provide housing and housing supportive services to thousands of people who have HIV and AIDS in a 29-county area, so a large part of Georgia, a large number of people with AIDS. And while this program has always had problems, over the last 4 years with this, the Bottoms administration specifically, the program has just become dysfunctional. It routinely takes them 6 to 9 months to execute a contract with the nonprofit organizations that actually provide these services. The city doesn't provide the services. They're just a pass-through for these federal dollars. And then it takes 6 to 9 months for organizations to get reimbursed. So you have organizations like Positive Impact Health Center, like Jerusalem House, like Aid Atlanta, that routinely have to carry budget deficits in the millions of dollars because the city of Atlanta doesn't pay its bills on time. What has happened over the last few years is that has reached a crisis proportion. We've now had several instances where people faced eviction. 2 years ago, in fact, there were about 250 people that were clients of the Living Room. The Living Room was forced to close its doors. One of the oldest housing service providers in the city was forced to close its doors. 250 people lost their, well, they faced eviction. There was no plan on getting these people transferred to other organizations or rehoused or reaching out to their landlords. The administration just really blew it in a very substantial way. Then in addition to that, it recently came out earlier this spring that at the time it was close to, it was over $90 million in federal funds that had not yet been used. So it's not corruption. It's the dollars were there. The city just had not drawn these dollars down from the federal government. And last year there was $4.5 million that went back. This year we had some concerns earlier on that it could be close to $7 million that would be sent back to the federal government. So with all of these problems, this is the top issue that we're actually looking at for city leadership. The mayor's office runs this program, but city council needs to play a role, an oversight role. I have been frustrated with city council as well, that they have not provided sufficient oversight and management of this program. A lot of people, myself included, George Hart Quality included, have reached out to numerous members of city council, and they've just thrown up their hands and said, well, it's not our problem. We can't force a hostile administration to answer our questions. We are specifically looking at how people plan to address this crisis. There are over 1,900 people on a waiting list right now. There are over 200 families that have been fully vetted. Their applications have been reviewed. They are totally qualified for this program, but there's no housing to provide them. We want to know what the next mayor will do about this and what the next mayor will do about this in his or her first 90 days in office. So that's why we just could not make decisions. No, everybody answered that question. We asked the question, and some of the answers were okay. Some of them were really bad. A couple of folks really, it was clear that they weren't quite sure what we were talking about when we were talking about HOPWA. This is something that we're going to be monitoring very, very closely, and headed into the runoff. And we are working with a number of organizations, the Out Georgia Business Alliance, Outfront Theater, Atlanta Pride Committee, and we are hoping to have a mayoral forum on November 17th, where we can delve deeply into the issues of HOPWA, other housing equity issues that have a disproportionate impact on the LGBTQ community here in Atlanta, as well as some specifics on youth homelessness and inclusion and opportunities for transgender individuals. So kind of HOPWA, youth housing, and inclusion and opportunities for transgender, gender nonconforming, and non-binary folks. Those are kind of the three areas that we're going to be looking at going forward. And it's going to be easier for us to have a forum when it's two candidates.
Yeah.
And you can hear from those candidates themselves more detailed responses than could happen if we had done it, you know, a forum with 14 people giving 2 or 3 minute answers to this or what is written. So,
well, I think it'll really give you the opportunity to highlight this issue too for the community as it gets closer to the election. That sounds really smart. And thank you for letting us know about that. That is not something that I was certainly aware of. And I've done work with the Living Room and Jerusalem House over the years. So that's just amazing to me. Not surprising though. The city of Atlanta has been notoriously dysfunctional over the years. We're going to take one more break here and we'll be right back. We are speaking with Jeff Graham with Georgia Equality. We'll be back.
WRFG 89.3 FM invites you to Monster Fest, the 2021 Little Five Points Halloween Festival on Saturday, October 16th and Sunday, October 17th. There'll be pop-up performances, live music, ghost tours, raffles and auctions, and plenty of devilish fun for all ages. On Saturday, grab a monster map at one of the Little Five Point Business Association's tents and search the neighborhood for hidden monsters created by local artists. And on both days, you'll find plenty of treats at Professor Morty's Haunted Market at the Little Five Point Center for Arts and Community. Proceeds will be used to pay for neighborhood security and for next year's return of the Little Five Points Halloween Parade. We hope you'll join us for Monster Fest, the Little Five Points Halloween Festival from noon to 7, Saturday, October 16th and Sunday, October 17th. For directions and more details, go to WRFG.org.
Carnivals and cotton candies, carousels and calliopes, fortune tellers in the glass cages, we will always
All right. That's actually Cheetah Rivera from Carousel. Welcome back to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 on your dial. You're listening to Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. I'm your host, Greg Bossen, and we are speaking with Jeff Graham about the upcoming elections and other things that's going on that are going on with Georgia equality. So, Jeff, you mentioned that you really wanted to focus on what was happening in some of the other cities around the state. And I have noticed that, and I think this is from your website, that there are 13 cities or municipalities or counties that have some sort of ordinance protecting LGBTQ people from discrimination. And I know you're looking to grow that number. Tell us about what's going on in Tucker, Georgia.
Yeah, so we're really focused this year. Our top priority is the Tucker municipal elections. Mayor and two city council seats are very specifically on the ballot. Despite a well-organized group of residents in Tucker who have been advocating for the last 3 years with their city leadership, Tucker is just about the only municipality inside the immediate metro Atlanta area, Fulton and DeKalb very specifically, that has yet to introduce, much less pass, a comprehensive non-discrimination ordinance. And until we have a state or a federal law that will protect members of the LGBT community and others from discrimination, these ordinances don't just affect the LGBT community. They do affect people of faith, people of color, immigrants, women, people with disabilities, people who are seniors. They're very broad, comprehensive protections in housing, public accommodations, and employment. But we know that there's a sizable LGBTQ community. We know that Tucker itself is very, very diverse.
Yes.
And so we have endorsed a mayor and two city council candidates in Tucker in the hopes that we can change the politics in Tucker, that Tucker leadership will be much more diverse, representative of the communities who live there, the communities they serve, and who are committed to seeing action and passage of a non-discrimination ordinance as one of the top priorities of a new city government in Tucker next year.
Yeah, well, I was
that's where we're really focused a lot this cycle.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to see that for sure. Now, there's a couple of other things. We just have a few minutes left. Well, we have about 8 or 9 minutes left. But there is, I want to turn our attention kind of back to that new law that was passed earlier mm-hmm. this year that we had discussed. And one of the specific pieces of it essentially allows the state from what my understanding is, to essentially take over elections in particular counties if they decide that for whatever reason the board isn't to be trusted or whatever. And I don't really understand how that works. So can you help us to understand the specifics of how this is supposed to work?
Well, it is dysfunctional, and frankly, it shouldn't really work. How it's supposed to work is that if there is a county board of elections, so these are the people that oversee the elections on the local level, set the rules, actually process the ballots, count the ballots, certify the elections, that if there's a board that's not operating effectively, so really severe problems with getting ballots out, or problems with getting ballots counted accurately or timely, that the state board of elections can come in and actually take over that election board. Where this is significant is that the election board used to be chaired by the Secretary of State. And while for the last 20 years or so that has been a Republican, that is a statewide elected official. That is now no longer, the Secretary of State no longer has power over the Board of Elections as the chair. And instead, the Board of Elections, while it still must be a bipartisan board, the leadership of that is now set by leadership of the Georgia House and the Georgia Senate. So it has now become even more of a political body. And
these are appointed.
The political
these people
party.
Are. These people
are
appointed. Okay.
These are appointed. So that's the big challenge, and where we have concerns, and I think where you may be going with this is that a large county such as Fulton County or DeKalb County. We could see efforts to have this state election board take over and run the elections, claiming that the local election officials are not doing their job adequately.
I mean, but I guess what I'm wondering is the board itself makes that decision. Can they make that decision at any point? Could they make the decision tomorrow based on previous activity? Would they make the decision a week before the election? I mean, is that how that can work?
I'll be honest with you, Greg. Some of the real specifics, I think we would need to play out you know, since this is a new provision. There has to be a process, and they have to basically be able to show that there is kind of a history of inaction. In this. How quickly they could move, I think, remains to be seen. So I don't think that folks should panic, but I do think that folks should be concerned about this. Because it could be something that, while I think it would be highly doubtful that they would come in before the current election and dissolve the board, even though the Secretary of State has made those claims publicly that he's going to try to immediately dissolve the board. He does not have that power, and it can't happen that quickly. But they could start building the case to perhaps try to take over in 2022, or more importantly, to try to take over in 2024. So this is something that it's very wonky. It's very detailed election law, but it's something that people really need to monitor and watch.
Yeah, my understanding is that I guess the idea would be to use 22 as a case to throw out the board, for 24 for the main elections.
Yeah.
But you basically restrict voting. You make more people have to go out on the day of elections, and then you show these long lines and people not being able to vote. And then you say, there you go. In particular, they're focused on Fulton County for a number of reasons, but one of which is because Kathy Woollard, our own Kathy Woollard, who I know personally, she's amazing. has been elected to the Fulton County Elections Board. And Raffensperger, who, again, you're saying he ultimately doesn't have a choice in the matter now. He's no longer on the state board or runs the state board. But anyway, he's cited Woolard's work with Fair Fight. That's the Stacey Abrams organization. And her support for Planned Parenthood is a reason why she can't serve on the board, which seems a little odd to me. I don't know what Planned Parenthood has to do with it, but interesting. What are you guys doing to stave that off? I know you wrote a letter.
Well, we first of all, Kathy also has worked for Georgia Equality in a variety of roles. She had been our lobbyist once upon a time. She hasn't been our lobbyist for the last 5 years. But she had been a lobbyist. She still works with us, frankly, on our foundation side, helping to do educational work around these non-discrimination ordinances around the state. So we do have a relationship with her. But that said, I've known and worked closely with Kathy almost as long as I've lived here in Atlanta, well over 30 years. And anybody who knows Kathy knows that her integrity is of paramount importance to her. Her reputation and her integrity, and the fact that she does care about the details and she cares deeply about democracy. And that's not a partisan issue. And so when Alex Wan stepped down as the chair of the Fulton County Elections Board, Chairman Rob Pitts nominated Kathy to take on that position. I think she's an ideal role model of what a public servant should be. In terms of caring about democracy, in terms of caring about the public, and in terms of caring yourself with great integrity. So we have pushed back against the Secretary of State. We are encouraging folks to come to the Board of Election meeting at Fulton County this coming week. It'll be Thursday morning to be observers, to make public comments. On the fact that, yes, there have been problems at the Fulton County Elections Office over the years. I mean, nobody denies that. But last year, despite COVID, despite the tremendous outpouring of absentee ballots, they started the year off a little shaky, but they ended the year incredibly strong. And we need to make sure that in the most populous county in the state of Georgia, that trajectory of improvement continues to go without challenge and without disruption. And that's what we're trying to do, is support Kathy in that role, but frankly, to support the entire Board of Elections, the entire election process here in Fulton County that we feel is under attack for partisan political reasons. We need to hold election officials accountable. There's nothing wrong with that. And we have been part of the chorus that has pointed out problems in Fulton County in the past. And one person, Kathy, she's just the chair of the board. She's not in charge of everything. She's just one person. But I think that this just shows the fights that may be ahead in the future. And that's why we want to support her. But again, it's more than her. It's about supporting the full Board of Elections and making sure that elections in Fulton County happen as efficiently and effectively and fairly as possible.
All right, cool. Well, that's well said. Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for coming on the show. We ran out of time here. There's a couple of other things I wanted to talk about. The state legislature next year, but we'll have you back on the show again if you're willing to. I'd love that. Anyway, all right. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jeff. Next up, we have Peach State Festival, and in the meantime, if you don't get anything else from this show, go vote. You can vote this weekend on Saturday, and you can vote next weekend on Saturday. All right. Take care, folks.